Kyala Tumidam Pasta, Kanamjana Shadakayam, Chakshum Nishantina, Kasmai Shri Kudve. Sri Chaitanya Manogusta, Stakutam Bhim Bhutale, Shrine Bhutta Kadavaitam, Pati Shravadam. The first thing is that visiting our very nice book tent, I noticed that they're selling various books published by one Lasky Harilal in Vrindavan. These books are mostly unsuitable for our reading. I would encourage you not to buy them, and if you purchase one, I would encourage you to go back to the book tent, return the book, and ask for your money back. And then I would encourage you to get one of the many wonderful titles published by BBT or written by our advanced wisdom devotees. Questions? What is the exact size of the soul? 1/10,000th the tip of a hair. Kechagra Chatvagasya Hansar described. Take the tip of a hair, measure it, divide it into 10,000 parts, that's the size of the soul. But apart from that, it's also described as being immeasurable. You can't materially calculate. But if you could materially calculate, or if you go by the calculation, you 1/10,000th the tip of a hair. Not very big. When it's said that we're small timers, it's a fact. Krishna is unlimitedly big, and we're 1/10,000th the size of the tip of a hair. On the other hand, it can be seen that the soul is so powerful that this little item, 1/10,000th the tip of the hair, is animating the whole body. One of those soccer players or one of these guys who's accomplishing something. And he's 1/10,000th the tip of the hair. So it's like uranium, a little tiny bit. It runs the whole submarine or something. Or probably give the example of a little cyanide. You put a little cyanide on your tongue and it's so powerful, that's it. Even though it's just, so the soul is so powerful, just by being small. Is it possible for a good-hearted, well-spoken, kind, and generous person to go to heaven without the need to have a relationship with Krishna? Yes, he can go to heaven. There are various planets called Svargaloka, which are the heavenly planets, and if you're kind, well-spoken, generous, and a lot more than that, because it's not so easy to get in just by being well-spoken, generous, and kind. But if you're very, very pious, you can go to the heavenly planets, and you can live there for 10,000 years, and then you fall back down to where you started from. So you can do that without being specifically Krishna conscious. You can be kind, generous, austere. It's not that you can be kind, generous, well-spoken, kind of take a nip of Jack Daniels now and then and go to heaven. Or kind, well-spoken, generous, and you have sex as and when, and you go to the heavenly planets. The heavenly planets, it's, to get into like a country club during the apartheid days here in South Africa was probably not something everybody could do. And the heavenly planets, by comparison, are much more exclusive. So they don't just take you and look at you and say, oh, he's kind, he's generous, he's well-spoken, and let him in. Forget it. The entry requirements are very stringent. And anyway, if you gain entrance, then you get a membership card, and your membership card is good for 10,000 years. And then after that, it expires. And when your card expires, you're back down here. That's the heavenly planets. Bhagavad-gita, Krishna explains that these heavenly planets are there. A very pious persons go there to fulfill their retires to heavenly enjoyment. They stay 10,000 years and come back down. But Mahu Petra Pukantaya, Krishna says, the highest planet down to the lowest in the material world are all places of birth and death. But one who comes back to me never returns to this material world. And for that, that means Krishna consciousness. What makes Krishna consciousness a true religion? Is it? And with all the differences that all the true religions have, would the important thing be their similarities? No, we're not a true religion. It's not that there's a Catholic religion and that's true, and there's a Jewish religion and that's true, and there's a Hare Krishna religion and that's true, and there's another religion and that's true, and then there's another religion, and that one over there, that one's false, and that one over there is false, but we're a true one. We're not one of these religions. We don't want you to join a religion and to adopt a religion and to say, now I belong to this religion, I don't belong to that religion. That's not our interest. Our interest is what's called Sanatana Dharma. Sanatana Dharma means the eternal occupation of the soul. That's different from Christian, Hindu, Muslim, Jain, Jewish, Seventh-day Adventist, what have you. That's not our interest. We're not looking to convert you from this religion to that religion. We don't care about that. Or our religion's better than their religion. That's not our point. That's temporary. The Christian becomes a Hindu, the Hindu becomes a Buddhist, the Buddhist becomes a Jain, the Jain becomes something else. We want to understand what is the eternal nature of the soul, what is the eternal occupation of the soul. Dharma means the characteristic, which is the inherent characteristic of something. Like in water, it's wetness. You can't say this water is dry. It's got to be wet or it's not water. This chili is sweet. No, it can't be sweet. It has to be hot. It can be hot and sweet, but it has to be hot. If it's not hot, it's not chili. Or it's not doing its job, it's chili. Something you get old chili and it's not hot, and it's like, what's the use of this? The chili has to be hot. Sugar has to be sweet. That's its very nature. So the very nature of the soul is its dharma. It's the dharma of sugar to be sweet, the dharma of chili to be hot, the dharma of water to be wet, and the dharma of the soul is to serve. Every living being has to serve. I serve my government, I serve my boss, I serve my family, I serve my country, I serve my community, I serve my senses, I serve my tongue, I serve my various senses. I serve my dog. Everyone is serving. The politician says, I'll give you the best service. Re-elect me. The businessman says, we're here just to serve our customers. Telephone companies. Here you just have one, but in America they compete. We give you the best service. Anyway, everyone has to serve. No one can say, I refuse to serve. You can say it, but we're all forced to serve. It's our nature to serve. But now I'm serving something temporary. I'm serving a temporary country, I'm serving a temporary business, I'm serving a temporary boss, I'm serving a temporary family, I'm serving a temporary pet, or I'm serving the temporary senses of this temporary body. That's called asanata, not eternal. I'm serving, but my position of service is not my eternal position. I'm not eternally the servant of the government of KwaZulu-Natal. I'm not eternally the servant of the Afrikaner community or of the African community or of the Indian community. I'm not eternally the servant of my wife, not eternally the servant of my children. That's not my eternal identity. I'm Mr. Patel, this is my wife, these are my children, and I'm their eternal servant. No. No way. The temporary relationship I have with my family, with my country, with my boss, with my customers, and whatever service I'm doing is in the temporary accounts. But my eternal nature is that I'm the servant of God. I've misdirected my service into the temporary account that it's supposed to be in the eternal account. I'm the servant of Krishna, but I've become the servant of Maya. Maya means that which is not. I'm imagining that I'm South African, that I'm this, that I'm that. And I'm serving in terms of these imaginations, in terms of these temporary designations. That means I'm misdirecting my eternal energy, my service and consciousness. And Krishna consciousness means to revive the sense that who I really am is, first of all, not this body, which may be an African or an Indian or this or that. I'm a soul. And as soul, what do? What is my eternal function? If I'm a clock, I tick. If I'm sugar, I make things sweet. If I'm soul, what do? I serve Krishna. And if I don't serve Krishna, I serve Maya. So Krishna consciousness means to revive that eternal relationship, to revive that realization that my relationship, my eternal relationship is with God, with Krishna. And then to act in that relationship. And to develop love for God. Like in marriage, the first thing is you establish a relationship, you get married. And then the next thing is there's dealings between husband and wife. And if the marriage works out nicely, then there's going to be love, as far as love is possible in the material world. First we establish a relationship, then we act in that relationship, and then there's love. So Krishna consciousness means, first I revive my eternal relationship as the servant of God, of Krishna. Then I act in that relationship, I perform devotional activities. And acting in that relationship, I come to the stage of love for God. The actual religion is the religion by which you develop your love for God. If your religion doesn't go there, it's a waste of time. Whether it's Hindu religion, Christian religion, paganism, whatever it is, if by following those principles we don't develop our love for God, we're wasting our time. We're wasting our time. And if by whatever principles you've followed, you've developed actually your love for God without any material motive, without any material interruption, then a religion is first class. You don't care what label it has, where it has its church, it's first class. So the Vedic literature offers that the best means of reviving that relationship, developing that relationship, especially in the present age, is the chanting of the holy name of God. God has unlimited names, chanting the name you want, or take advantage of this universal name, Krishna, and chant Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram. Through many rebirths, a devotee goes once to the ultimate planet of Krishna. Does that mean that one cannot join the Supreme Godhead in one lifetime? You can't join in one lifetime because you've already been through millions. So it's not a one lifetime project because no one starts with one lifetime. You've already done 10, 20, 20,000, 200,000. But this lifetime you can become Krishna conscious. Why? If it takes millions of lifetimes, all right, you've already done the millions, now here's the one, do it, be finished. That's the idea. I think Krishna is amazing. And I truly and wholeheartedly believe in him. But I'll be honest with you. I don't really want to join him in the afterlife. Because I don't mind coming back to Earth. I feel that I need to protect it. Maybe heal it somehow. So my question is it okay to ask God or Krishna to gain some sort of supernatural abilities purely to help others and not for selfish reasons? I want to give all of myself to this planet, heal the sick, help those that truly need it, basically make life a little bit better for those who are suffering. Well, that's a nice sentiment. And that's all it is a sentiment. It's totally impractical. It's a dream. It's not going to happen. It's useless. Make this, I don't mind coming back because I want to heal the earth. The earth is a jail, ladies and gentlemen. You're not going to make it a nice place. It's certified by the Creator, Krishna himself, as being Dukkhalaya. Dukkhalaya means a place where miseries are abundantly dispensed. That's what it is. Birth, which is troublesome, death, which is horrible, disease, which is miserable, and old age, which is frustrating and depressing. That's what the world has to offer. It's built in. You can't say, well, I'm going to heal the earth. No more death. I'm going to get supernatural abilities. Okay, let's suppose you could get supernatural abilities. How much? No more death. Death is terrible. We're going to wipe it out. No more old age. Everybody's going to be young forever. No more disease. Disease is the pits, and the doctors make too much money, so no more disease. And no more rebirth. Are you going to do that? And if not, what are you going to do? Are you going to take the Dukkhalaya, the place of miseries, and make it Sukkhalaya, a place of unlimited happiness? No, you can't. It's built in. The saying is, you can't make a silk purse of a sow's ear. You know that expression? You can't make a silk purse of a sow's ear. Sow is a female pig, right? So you take the nice, soft ear of the female pig and somehow you turn it into a silk purse. You can't do that. It's a pig's ear, no matter what you do. You want to make a silk purse, you have to have silk. You can't take a pig's ear and make a silk purse. And that's what they want to do. We want to make this material world into a wonderful place where everyone loves one another, where everyone's happy, where people are not miserable, where no one's starving, where no one's sick, where no one's oppressed, where the air is always clean, where the water is always pure, where no one exploits others unnecessarily. Forget it. 100% out of the question. Elsewhere, Krishna says, anityam asukam lokam. Anitya means, even if we think it's a great place, you want to heal it, it's going to die. If you heal the earth, it's going to die anyway. It lasts for a certain amount of time, and then, it's destroyed. It's destroyed. You can't stop that. put all this energy into making the earth a better place, and even if you, somehow you could do it, somehow you succeeded by supernatural powers in making this place happy and wonderful and free from all miseries. Finally, just like that, it's all finished. And that's on the cosmic level. On the individual level, even if I made this a wonderful place, full of happiness, blah, 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 every individual person, finished. It's like you took a mosquito and you made his life wonderful. Nobody's going to swat him. He's going to have blood given to him on a golden tray. You can have his pick of any female mosquito that he wants, or any number of female mosquitoes. You're going to give him heaven on earth. And the mosquito is going to be so happy he can sweat. My God, what did I do? Finally, he's a mosquito, and after however long a mosquito gets to live, over. So what good did you do? What finally did it come to? And as for the mosquito, so for the human being. You give him a beautiful place to live. You give him great food. You give him a girl of his dreams. You give him no AIDS, no cancer, no tuberculosis, no Alzheimer's, no this, no that. You give him unlimited high-speed broadband. And then it dies. So what was the use of it? If you're an atheist, you gave him all of this stuff, and then he dies and became dust. So what did you do? What was the point? You changed his patterns of ones and zeros. Instead of being 1100110, now it's 0011011. So what? And then finally the whole pile of ones and zeros was just turned into vapor. You made it a better world. Or if you don't take the atheistic point of view, you take the spiritual point of view. So he had this wonderful, happy life full of everything he could have dreamed of, and then he took birth again. And there's 8,400,000 species. You don't know what birth he took next. Maybe you gave him all the meat he wanted and now he's become a tiger. Or he wanted to look real sharp, so dress nicely, and now he's a zebra. He's vegetarian and wanted to eat a lot. He's become a hippopotamus. There's so many different species of life. And so you made his life wonderful. And now he's become a dog. What did you do? It's a useless effort. It's a useless effort. But the spirit is good. To give myself to others. That spirit is very good. But healing the sick, you heal him. You know, he broke his arm and you mend his arm. Then he breaks his leg and you mend his leg. Then he gets cancer and you cure it. And he gets hit by a truck and he dies. You can't heal. And besides that, everyone has his own karma. As a result of his previous karma, he must get exactly that quota of suffering. If it's 10 units, he has to get 10 units. If it's 20 units, he has to get 20 units. And if you you knock out the suffering over here, he'll get it over there. You can't change that by material efforts. He must get exactly the 14 and a half units of happiness he was meant to get, and exactly the 14 and a half units of suffering he was meant to get. And you cannot change it by any material effort at all. He gets exactly what material nature has given. Exactly. You can't change it. You can be under the illusion that you're changing it. I extended his life, I made his life better, but it was actually all written in the cards to begin with. And you're not changing anything. You can't make this world a little bit better, not even by a micron's difference. On account of the total karma, it's going to be exactly 14,372,000.6 units of suffering, and you can't reduce that by even a fraction of a unit, nor increase the happiness. It's exactly according to nature's laws, and you can't change it. Therefore, the real change is to bring people to the spiritual platform by which they get out of this material world. Anityam asukham, it's a miserable world, it's a temporary world, and you know, it's not the right world, it's the wrong place. The real welfare work is not to take the jail and take its hard steel bed and line it with pillows. Real thing is, get him out of jail. This is jail. It can't be turned into something else. We can be under the illusion that I'm living in a palace, I'm living in lollipop land, but it's jail. And the purpose of the Krishna consciousness movement is to open people's eyes so they see this is not Disneyland, it's jail. And my business is to get out of jail and to go back to my real home, which is the abode of Krishna. That's the purpose. So the spirit is great. You have full faith in Krishna. You want to do something for others. So join this Krishna consciousness movement. Give your full energy for this Krishna consciousness movement and do the best little for them. If you get one person to chant Hare Krishna once, you just did more than the entire Red Cross, Green Crescent, and 14 Friends of the Earth combined. If a person just chants Hare Krishna once, he's made so much advancement after his millions and millions and millions of lifetimes. That much, you've done more than all the welfare workers of this material world. Give one person a book by which he understands, I'm not supposed to stay here, I'm supposed to go. You've done all more than the welfare workers of all history. Mundane welfare work can't be compared to the benefits that one gets by Krishna. Benefits of that mundane welfare work can't be compared. It's actually an offense to think that the spreading of the holy name of Krishna and the performance of material welfare activities are on the same level. It's an offense to the holy name of Krishna. It's like being introduced to the president of the country and saying, Mr. Mayor, I'm so glad to meet you, it's an honor. Mayor and the president are not on the same level. So there's some thoughts about that. But the spirit of wanting to get, and can I pray to Krishna to gain some supernatural good. Yes. Prabhupada was sometimes asked, can you do miracles? Because people, sentimental people, have the idea that a guru is a person who can make gold appear just like that, or make ashes appear out of nowhere, or make Shalagram Shila's little sacred stones come out of his mouth, or, you know, they have some idea of miracles or walk on water. And Prabhupada pointed to the devotees who were with him and said, this is the miracle. You take a person who is completely interested in materialistic life and bring him into the service of Krishna, who's the greatest miracle. So you can pray to Krishna for that ability, just like Arjuna Maharaj has supernatural powers. Wherever he goes, he chants Hare Krishna, and people become devotees. So you can pray to Krishna for that. Let me chant nicely, let me serve you nicely, let me bring people to Krishna consciousness, let me distribute these books. That you can pray for, and that would be wonderful. Then your life becomes successful, and we do the greatest welfare work for the benefit of others. Please explain the relationship of Krishna and Ram. Expansions. Ram, Krishna and Ram expansions. Can we move from the notes? Can you read this? What this word is? Okay, the relationship between Krishna and Ram. Ramadi Murti Shukala Niyamena Tishtan Nana Avatara Makaroku Vineshukintu. It's the nature of God that he can appear in many different forms to perform many different activities. Something like an actor. You see, he's old now. Some Shakespearean actor, and you see him on Tuesday and he's Hamlet, and you see him on Friday and he's Macbeth, and you see him next Sunday and he's King Lear, and you see him 2 weeks later and he's Julius Caesar, and you see him the next time he's Brutus, and he's changing roles. Sometimes he's this, sometimes he's that. Sometimes he's ruling a kingdom, sometimes he's in love with Juliet, you know, so many things. So he's the same person, but for a purpose, for the entertainment of the crowd or the enlightenment of the crowd, he's performing these different roles, sometimes this one, sometimes that one. And the actors in this material world, that's what they do. Someone asks a child, what does your daddy do? He says he pretends to be other people. So the actors, they play different roles. So Krishna also does that. He's the original actor. He plays in different roles. Sometimes a king, sometimes a sage, sometimes half lion, half man, sometimes a fish, sometimes a tortoise, sometimes this, sometimes that. He has so many different roles that he plays. Why? Pratranaya sadhunam dinashaya chakrushti. To favor his devotees and to smash the demonic elements in the world. And dharma samsthapanaya, to firmly establish eternal spiritual principles, Sanatana Dharma, Krishna consciousness. For these purposes, Krishna comes, Sambhavani you gave him again and again, again and again. Ramadi Murti Shukravasa. So, non-avatar, there's thousands and thousands of such forms. And they're mentioned in Vedic literature. Rama, Nrisimha, Varaha, Kurma, Matsya, many, many, many Gupta, Kalki, many, many Vishnu avatars. Avatar means form of God who descends on this world. Ramadi Murti Shukalani Adena Tishka. So there's a list given in Srimad Bhagavatam of principal avatars. Ram, Nrisimha, Varaha, many forms. Krishna Swayam Samabhava Paramahuna. Of all those forms, Krishna is the original form. Krishna Stu Bhagavan Swayam. Just as there may be a candle, a candle, from that candle you light another candle, that candle, another, another, another. So they're all, you look at all the candles, they're all the same. The same fire is glowing from all the candles. But one candle is still the original. That's Krishna. Krishna is the original personality of the Godhead. Krishna is through Guru Mahasaya. And all of the other forms are expansions of Krishna. They're Krishna, playing different roles. Sometimes fish, sometimes king, sometimes sage, sometimes some other form. But the original form, in which God fully manifests all of his transcendental qualities, is Krishna. So Ram is also Krishna in the role of a king. In the role of the ideal king. And people worship Ram with great respect, with great veneration. His greatest devotee, Hanuman, show the ideal of the relationship of service. But when God comes as Krishna, he puts aside the formality, the awe and reverence, and he shows other relationships. Friendship. You're playing with the cowherd boys like equals. He takes the role of an ideal child. He takes the role of the perfect husband for 16,000 wives. He takes the role of lover for the gopis of Vrindavan. So what is shown by Krishna is beyond what's shown by any other incarnation, or could be shown, because Krishna is the original personality of God. But from another angle of vision, there's no difference between Krishna and Ram. They're the same personality of Godhead, but Krishna is showing, just as you have this light and some other light which might be half as big or three quarters as big, it's the same light, but one you're seeing the full 300 watts or whatever. The other is 50 watts, 100 watts, 200, 250. And at the same time, they're both light. So Ram is God, Nrisimha is God, Varaha is God, they're all the same Supreme Person. They're not even a different, it's not a different person. The person who's playing King Lear today is not a different person from the person who's playing Romeo tomorrow. It's the same actor. In different roles. It's the same Krishna playing in different roles. But in his original role, he's Krishna. Can we eat the remains of the something prayer? I can't make out what this says. So whoever wrote it, if you're still here, you could tell me, or you could send the question around again, making it more clear. I don't know But we should heed what's offered to Krishna. That's the conclusion. Prasade yogya shastam vasanto mukshanto. Can we give the holy water from the temple to the unholy people, meat eaters? You can, yeah, not give, not like we'll take a pot of holy water and give it to them to cook their meat in. But if you sprinkle it on them, they get a spiritual benefit because it's the remnants of something offered. No one is excluded. It said that the sun doesn't withhold its sunlight even from the house of the beggar. It's not that the sun says, okay, let's find the ritzy area and shine down there. And in the slums, we're not going to shine because they're low class people. We're not going to shine there. No, the sun is equal, shines everywhere. So Krishna is equal to everyone. He claims to be the father of all living beings. He's the best friend of all living beings. He's the well-wisher of all living beings. So Krishna consciousness is open for all living beings. It's not that you have to be born in a certain class or belong to a certain race or belong to a certain country or this or that. Krishna is for everyone. As the sun is for everyone, Krishna is for everyone. You don't have to belong to a particular religion. It's not that he's the god of the Hindus, Krishna is the Hindu god. That's rubbish. God is not the Hindu god or the Christian god or the this god or that god. God is for everyone. So the mercy of God is also for everyone. This Hare Krishna mantra is for everyone. We don't say, are you eating meat? No? Okay, here's the mantra. For everyone. We don't care what you're eating, what you're drinking, what else you're doing. Take this mantra. That's the real welfare work. That's the real welfare. That a person who's doing any kind of degrading activity out of ignorance or foolishness can hear this transcendental vibration and become the most elevated saintly person. The example is there. Narada Muni took a hunter who was half killing animals just to enjoy watching them squirm and writhe in pain. He took such a person and made him into a devotee. And when he became a devotee, he was so kind that he didn't want to step on an edge. That same person was half killing animals for enjoyment, didn't want to step on an edge. So you can do this. You can give this mantra to anyone, anywhere in the world. You can give them these books, you can give them this knowledge, and give them the opportunity to become the most exalted person. That's Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Dinihina Yata Chila Harinane, to uplift the whole world. Not materially, not to cure their sicknesses or make their water more pure or help them live on an earth where species were not in danger of extinction. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu didn't waste his time for any of this. He went directly for the highest purpose, to take people who are in ignorance, in the lowest grips of illusion, and lift them up to become fully qualified to go back to God and get out of this material world. If you can take part in this, you can take part in this and spread this. Make your own life successful and spread this wealth for the work for the whole benefit of the whole world. You may not do as much as Srila Prabhupada did and spread this movement in every corner of the world, but wherever you are, whoever you meet, you can give them this message of Krishna consciousness and give them the greatest benefit. Please forgive me if this question causes offense. What do we say to a disciple whose spiritual master has fallen down? The spiritual master must be the well-wisher to all, and I imagine that such a disciple must be traumatized. Yeah, you are absolutely right. There's hardly anything that can be said in consolation, except that Krishna is always there, and Krishna's devotees are always there. It's certainly the greatest traumatic event. But Krishna is there. And even Krishna says, even if a person falls down, still, he'll come quickly back up. It's not eternal loss. But for us, it's a great challenge. That's it. And there's more to be said about it. But that's the summary. When one is experiencing anartha vritti, how should one act to help uproot the bad quality smoothly? Artha means something valuable. And anartha means just the opposite. So anartha is a bad quality, something unwanted within ourselves, something pernicious. That's anartha. So anartha vritti means when we find that within ourselves, what should we do to uproot it? The best thing is to chant this Maha Mantra. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. But it's described, actually, there's a process. The beginning is to have some interest in getting free from material contamination. To have some interest, or to have some faith that there must be a process for that. And the next step is to associate with saintly devotees. If I'm interested in getting free from material